Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDIP, the official podcast of the Faculty Development and Innovation Center at EIU. I'm Kim Irvin, instructional designer at EIU, and your host today. This podcast is to further promote teaching excellence through the sharing of information related to instructional design, teaching strategies, and innovation. In this episode, we'll be exploring an important topic affecting educators across higher education, faculty burnout. Joining me today are two EIU faculty members who will share their insights, experiences, and strategies to help build resilience to faculty burnout. Please welcome Dr. Misty Rhodes, professor from the Department of Public Health and Nutrition, and also Dr. Andrew Cairns, associate professor and graduate coordinator from the Department of Kinesiology, Sport, and Recreation. Misty and Andrew, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Great. So I want to jump right in, and if you know me, you know I'm a why person. I kind of let that inner two-year-old come out and ask, why? So I'd like to start our conversation just to ground it and maybe address why we are having this conversation and why you wanted to record a podcast on this topic for your colleagues.
Thank you for that question, Kim. And the why is always so important. And to be honest, I think the decision to have this conversation, it came from a place of deep concern and recognition of just how prevalent faculty burnout has become. And as someone who is both a professor and a somatic and mental health therapist, I see burnout not just as a workplace issue, but as something that's deeply tied to our well-being physically, mentally, and emotionally. And what's been striking to me is how many colleagues I've spoken to at all levels of academia who are feeling overwhelmed, exhausted, and disconnected. And I think we're at a point where we can't ignore it anymore, because burnout isn't just about overwork. It's about the pressure, the expectations, and the emotional toll of always being on, especially in a field where we care for students, and this is central to our role. But burnout, it also often gets minimized in higher education as if it's just part of the job, and it's not. And so the reason we wanted to do this podcast is to share the very real challenges that faculty face, but also to talk openly about strategies like mindfulness and self-compassion practices that can help us navigate these challenges. And my hope is that by opening up this conversation, we normalize talking about burnout, provide a sense of community for those struggling, and give practical tools to begin addressing it. Andrew, what do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Misty. I'll echo a lot of those comments about burnout. I think in higher education, and frankly, any teaching profession, there's this constant pressure and stress to be productive. And I think for many people, that mindset is really fostered during graduate school, and it's such a disservice to our personal and professional well-being. I talk about this with students, and you know, younger people have this idea of grind culture, and I think it's really sad that we as a society have normalized this way of being in our everyday lives that's not good for our health and well-being. So, I mean, frankly, to be clear, I'm susceptible to that mindset just like everybody else. And I think even when it's indirect, I can feel that pressure to always do a little bit more work, you know, whether it's staying late, working nights and weekends, even taking your laptop on vacation. But it's frustrating because can't easily point to where that pressure is coming from. It's just kind of there. So it's also hard because it often feels like we're sort of powerless to change it. You know, when talking with Misty about this, it was clear we both wanted to normalize talking about burnout as well as point out what we can do about it individually and collectively to begin to address it.
Awesome. That really explains like where it's all coming from. I really appreciate how you both emphasize the importance of normalizing these conversations around faculty burnout. It's clearly, you know, not just an individual struggle, but a shared experience. And the reason I really like that is because when we collectively acknowledge faculty burnout, or really anything, It creates space for meaningful action, which then can lead to change. So that's why that really triggered with me. As we record this podcast, we are approaching the end of spring semester, a heightened, stressful time in higher education for many. From a faculty perspective, can we identify what is happening under the surface even more a little bit to keep faculty burnout persisting and keeping it going and alive?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kim. I think something that is in our awareness but needs to be brought to the forefront is collective stress. And this happens when a group of people, whether it's a workplace, a community, or an entire society, experiences ongoing pressure, uncertainty, or crisis together. In higher education, faculty and staff have been carrying an immense amount of this stress. Budget cuts, heavier workload, shifting student needs, and an increasingly demanding academic culture. These all add to the pressure. And on top of our usual stressors, such as grading papers, answering emails, and meeting deadlines, collective stress adds on another layer, and it creates an emotional undercurrent that we all feel. We might not always recognize it, but we feel it. And it drains our energy faster, it reduces our patience, and it makes us feel disconnected, not only from our work, but from each other. And faculty and staff often take on emotional labor. We support students while navigating their challenges, and we're navigating our own. We're in a world right now with a lot of unknowns. In addition to these professional demands, personal pressures such as family responsibilities, health concerns, and financial worries make it even more difficult to cope. Our nervous system is designed to handle short bursts of stress, but when stress becomes constant, especially collective stress, it can leave us stuck in what is survival mode. So this might show up as exhaustion, anxiety, irritability, or feeling emotionally numb. And it's not just a personal failing. It's our body's natural response to a prolonged overwhelm. The challenge with collective stress is that it can be hard to name. We might assume we are personally failing, or we just need to push through. In reality, we are part of a system that is struggling, and the stress we feel is not just ours, it is shared. And recognizing this can be the first step in finding real support and solutions. And when institutions acknowledge collective stress and actively support faculty and staff, we can begin to shift the culture from burnout to sustainability.
Misty, you touched on something there that I want to just dive a little bit deeper into, because I think our listeners would benefit from this, our body's responses to this. Can I ask how, maybe to expand on that, how have you personally experienced this emotional undercurrent? And really, I'm asking both of you. You expressed some of the signs, anxiety in our body that we experience. Are there other symptoms that you notice in yourself or maybe in your colleagues, without mentioning names, of course, but that make you think, okay, what's going on? Is this something, do I need to take a time out here, or, you know, what's happening?
Sure, I can jump in on that one. So I think for a lot of people, COVID was a really big turning point in higher education. And I think it was for a variety of reasons, though, collectively as a society, we started to pay more attention to the mental health issues that our students were experiencing. And obviously that was a really good thing. But I think what it also brought out is that our students were and still are not doing well, right? And we've had to really start facing that and doing something about it. So I just remember seeing students, you know, whether it was in class or on a Zoom call during COVID, and people were just fried. I mean, they were just exhausted, whether it was physically, emotionally, intellectually. So like Misty mentioned, we as faculties, advisors, other sort of frontline staff, spent a lot of time and did a lot of emotional labor to help students process what they were going through. But again, we were going through a lot of that same things too. So I remember one specific conversation pretty vividly. I had two students that came into a 9 a.m. class. It was in person. And they had both worked the night shift at their respective jobs. And so they've been up, you know, for 24 hours at this point. And they really just wanted somebody to listen to them, to hear what they were going through. And they needed someone to tell them that, you know, even if things didn't seem like they were going really well now, that they would get better. And that was a really meaningful, really challenging conversation to have, because it has nothing to do with the content that I had planned for that day. But obviously, like, that's not what the students needed. So what they needed was to feel like this effort and this energy that they were putting into their education, that it was going to mean something, you know, that they were going to be okay. And it's not easy when you can see that, I don't know what the end goal on this, right? So when you think about all the stuff that they put into it with school, work, extracurriculars, they want that validation. And I tried. I really tried, because, you know, I care. That's why we're doing something like this podcast. We want to see our students do well. But then at the same time, I had to go home with my spouse and two kids. They were ages 3 and 12 at the time. And I had the same struggles. You know, I'm looking at my kids that are going through the difficulty, maybe less than my 3-year-old at the time, but my 12-year-old certainly felt that stress being in middle school. So I joked with my spouse, who's a social worker, and I just said, look, like, here's the challenges my students are going through. Like, I need someone to hold me and tell me it's okay at the end of the day. So, you know, back to your question, Kim, about signs and symptoms. I know there's times during the semester where my, you know, weekday evenings where I'm working late, trying to catch up on things, trying to get grading done. And I know that that leads to me getting irritable. I know that that adds to my stress. And I know that my capacity for getting things done goes down, because I just feel that overwhelmed feeling. You're getting into that burnout. So for me, one of the warning signs is always just, oh, if I can just, you know, push through this and get one more thing done, right? That's sort of grad school mentality. And then all of a sudden, one more thing becomes 5 more things. And then you have to stop and look in the mirror and say, does this really need to happen right now? Would I just be better going for a walk or going to bed or doing something different? And so that to me is one of those things very personally that I feel and experience, that I'm sure many others have gone through as well.
Something you mentioned, Andrew, that kind of resonates is read the room, you know, a little bit. And I'm talking about maybe a classroom in this situation, but you were in tune with what your students needed at the time, and they needed the need to feel heard. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just taking a time out a little bit and reading your room, reading your situation, your environment, what's going on. And then that need to be heard is just really universal, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, so yeah, that's key. Well, Misty and Andrew, thank you for helping us understand, you know, what's under the surface of faculty burnout and how it manifests. But shifting our focus to more of a work through, a resilience, what strategies have either of you found effective for managing collective stress? I think Andrew started to touch on those just a little bit there at the end. You know, are there any hacks that have helped you maintain your well-being, particularly maybe during challenging periods like the end of a semester?
Yeah, well, I started to touch on the one of, hey, I'm going to stay up later and get some more of this work done. But that messes with your sleep schedule, you know, and that's that keeping a consistent sleep schedule is obviously one of the big ones, just trying to get your rest to be able to recharge for the next day. I also like to try to schedule short breaks throughout my day so that I'm getting up to go refill my water bottle and I'll sort of just walk around the building, you know, to take an extra lap. Or even as I've gotten older and gotten glasses and the optometrist says, you really shouldn't stare at your screen consistently for hours at a time. So just trying to take those short mental breaks to look outside and kind of give your eyes a break. But one of my biggest strategies is exercise. You know, it's trying to build that in every day so that whether I'm walking on campus or going to the campus rec center, it's trying to engage physically in that way. But man, it makes such a difference in terms of reducing stress level. So getting outside is great. I'm a parks and recreation guy, so obviously getting out into a park, getting where there's trees, getting where there's water, and Charleston has plenty of that, whether it's right on campus or right near campus, so there's those opportunities for sure.
I just want to add, too, the steps part, because from a personal experience, I knew that, like, getting up and walking, going on a walk was good for you, but I never bought into it because I thought, well, I could get this amount of work done while I'm the same mm-hmm. amount of time, you know, that I'm using to get some steps in. But I've been a lot more intentional about doing that lately. And a testimony here for me is I have seen the difference in my mindset now that I'm being more intentional and doing this for more of a health related reasons. I can see the impact. So I'm definitely in the camp of, I understand if you just don't want to take a break, do it anyway, and you'll see the positive results.
I think the easy thing on that is just, it's try it out. You know, are you committing to building a new habit at this point? No, you're just saying, hey, I realize that I'm stressed at this point, and maybe I'm going to give this walking thing a try and get up every hour and go walk around the building for a minute and just give myself that little time and space to clear your head or stop and talk with a colleague, which is one of the next strategies I was going to talk about. You know, it's great to be able to connect with colleagues, whether it's in your department or across campus. That's been one of the great things for my involvement with FDIC is meeting folks like Misty, where I didn't realize we had some of these shared interests, and you go, okay, we're part of these faculty learning communities together, or these book groups, and you start to build these bridges and connections with people, and you realize, wow, there's a lot more, you know, when we think about academia and sort of getting out of our silos and getting out of our offices, there's a lot more on campus that EIU has to offer in terms of that kind of collegiality that provides a lot of meaningful connections.
Absolutely, and you touched on it, our faculty learning community, and just to dive a little bit deeper into that for our listeners, this last academic year was the first year that we've offered through the FDIC a mindfulness faculty learning community, and the three of us have been a part of that, and that has been beautiful to watch unfold. We've had about a dozen or a little bit more faculty commit to pretty much everyone committed, you know, the whole academic year, fall and spring, to meeting every other week, coming together and learning about mindfulness strategies that first priority was that they can use for themselves, but then also discussions would sometimes drift into exposing their classroom to these strategies as well when they're reading the room and needing to maybe implement something like this to kind of shift the energy in the classroom. So I'll put a link to the Mindfulness Faculty Learning Community webpage in the show notes, because if you're interested in becoming, you know, joining this community, we'd love to have you, because we're definitely going to repeat it next academic year.
Yeah, and just to speak to the faculty mindfulness group, one, it helped me stop feeling so isolated, which can happen on a college campus when we get siloed into our own areas. And the other thing is, we always talk about reading the room for our students, but we actually have a responsibility to read the room for each other. And good so point. This group did that. And I want to say that faculty are the nervous system of a university. And that's very important. And so when faculty feel met and heard and seen and regulated, then it fosters a sense of belonging that we can pass down to our students. And so we need to read the room for each other and be able to be present and bear witness and see and hear and support each other. And so that's what really happened for me in this faculty group. And I just appreciate all the people who showed up this semester for it.
It was great. Great.
For sure. One other thing in terms of recommendations, sort of last one here, but an important one, is recognizing the power and limitations of technology. I'm sure we'll talk about AI in a future podcast when it gets into faculty well-being. But one of the things that I often think and talk with students about is, you know, understanding that technology is great and we want to learn that so that you can be sort of knowledgeable about those things when you go out into the world, but also, you know, understanding that smartphones and social media were designed to be addicting, right? They're designed to capture your attention. And so if you are not aware of that, or if that's not something that is sort of present of mind, that, again, does it mean you have to make some whole scale change? No, just means you have to maybe make a commitment to, hey, maybe I'm going to leave my phone in my office when I go for a walk, or maybe I'm going to turn my phone off for a little while if I'm trying to focus on something, and really embracing that and seeing what does that do for your well-being and for your quality of life. And I, again, am not perfect. This is one of my personal challenges to continue to try to do, to use my technology less. And it really does make a huge difference in my life. I've noticed a noticeable change when I'm less focused on social media, less focused in on what's going on, that is sort of filtered through that device, and more just being present around other people.
So we did talk about faculty burnout and staff, but burnout happens in everyone's life, including our students. And it's helpful to talk, but we really wanted to share with you a couple of ways that you can really help your nervous system at this time of year, or really any time, deal with burnout. The first thing I'm going to share with you is a path to regulating your nervous system, which is called glimmers. And this is a concept that's going to sound unusual at first, but it's really important. It's so important that my department actually has a glimmer board, and I enjoy every day going in and seeing what people have posted. Glimmers are tiny moments of experiences of safety, connection, joy, or calm that helps activate your parasympathetic nervous system. So it helps you stop feeling overwhelmed. And what we have been taught is to focus on these really big wins or these big breaks that happen in life. But life isn't just about the big things, right? It's the glimmers, the small moments, the fleeting experiences that bring a sense of ease to our bodies and our minds. So for example, it can be feeling the sunlight on your face, especially as you step outside in the spring. It can be hearing a piece of music that you love, or even connection that you feel with a colleague who gives you a kind word or says, congratulations on publishing, or congratulations on getting tenure. So these glimmers, when we notice them and we savor them, which means slowing down, it sends a message to our nervous system that we are safe and supported. And the beautiful thing about glimmers is that they are everywhere. So you can intentionally cultivate this in your day-to-day life. Pause and notice these moments, and this will help you start to regulate and support resilience. It's a simple shift of your attention, but one that makes a profound difference and how we experience stress.
That's awesome. I love that your department does that.
I know, I love it too.
That is awesome. And that's something that you could incorporate too into a class.
Yeah, I do that in my classes. And like students will even email me their glimmers like the following semester.
Oh, that's great.
That's yeah, awesome.
It's exciting.
That's awesome.
And then you get to build with that. The second method that we wanted to share is called the STOP method. And it helps you pause for stress relief. It's simple. It's a technique to interrupt your stress and reset your nervous system. And it works like this. S stands for stop. Stop whatever you're doing. And even though this sounds simple, it is powerful. Our minds are in constant motion. We jump from one task to another. We don't even realize it. And stopping helps interrupt the mental chatter and create space for you to become present. T, take a breath. Not just any breath, but a deep, intentional breath. Feel your rib cage expand and activate your parasympathetic nervous system. You can inhale for a count of four, hold for four, and exhale for six. This kind of deep breathing will calm your nerves and signal to your body again that you're safe. O is for observe. Take a moment to observe what's happening in your body and mind. How do you feel physically? Where are your areas of tension? What emotions do you notice? And by simply noticing, you bring a sense of groundedness and control. And finally, proceed. After you've taken a moment to stop, breathe, and observe, proceed with more awareness. You have the ability now to approach your task or situation you're facing from a place of calm and clarity rather than a place of reactive stress. The time that I use this most is when I'm in a difficult conversation and I want to respond instead of react and know that I'm not going to say something that I can't take back.
I once heard someone say, and I just, obviously I can't think of who it was right now, but let your first word in your response be a deep breath. And that was very powerful. And that's exactly what you just said, Misty.
There's power in the pause.
Mm-hmm. It's great. Absolutely. Yeah. This conversation has been so, I think, needed, obviously. That's why we did this. But it really helps normalize this topic. And hopefully the faculty that listen to this can take away some information, you know, understanding strategies. Thank you so much for sharing this space today to address this and get on the level with your colleagues, so to speak. This has been so helpful.
Thank you.
Yes. You know, as we conclude, I just want to thank Misty and Andrew again for educating us about collective stress and that, you know, what's causing it, sharing their experiences, being transparent with how they feel it and how it manifests with them, and the practical strategies, you know, that we've been discussing to build resilience. One parting thought is to remember that addressing burnout isn't selfish, it's essential. And when we normalize these conversations and prioritize our well-being, we become more effective educators and better role models for our students. Please don't hesitate to reach out to any one of us or our Faculty Development and Innovation Center. Contact information will be included in the show notes. As always, thank you for listening and continuing to learn.